So up to page 66 in Mishneh Berurah, Tzimun Tov Kuf Nun Zayim. Lo mat Nachem, v'aneinu b'tisha b'av. Adalachos of Nachem in Aneinu. Interesting. Tisha B'av, bottom line. On Tisha B'av, Oymer, Boine Yerushalayim, during Boine Yerushalayim, she will recite, Nachem Hashem Elokeinu Yisavei L'Tzion. Who says it? Everyone. V'aneinu b'shemeh tefillin, will also recite, Aneinu in Shemea Tefillah. V'im lo yama, and if you didn't say, Loizeh v'loizeh, if you didn't say Aneinu, you didn't say Nachem. Ein machzir inoy, so you do not need to go back. Rabbi say, it's important to say Aneinu, it's important to say Nachem. It's important to say. But unlike other editions, if you miss this, you don't go back. V'aminik poshut, she'ein oivu nasez d'ramo, v'aminik poshut, The generally custom is she'ein oimrim nachem rak b'tfilas mincha shel tisha b'av. When do we say nachem? Only by mincha. Is that the Sfardi minhag as well? We say nachem tisha b'av. Nachem rak b'tfilas mincha shel tisha b'av. Lefi she'oz etzisu eish b'mikdash, because that is when the fire is. Basically, just flames, fire. B'mincha. And that's when we are talking about the Nechama, which is what's Nechama, the comfort. So Nachem, Kodesh Baruch Hu, have mercy, and we're talking about, there's already an element of, you know, it's like, after Mincha is already the time of, you know, you sit up, you don't have to sit on the floor anymore, and Mincha, there's a certain element of Nechama already. The Nechama already. The comfort, the
prayer is almost packed.
The what?
The prayer is almost packed.
The open prayer is almost packed. Shein nachem agbarak b'tfilah as mincha shel tishbav lefi she'oz etzisu b'mikdash lachem mispalnin ala zel nechama. Mi she'ochel b'tishbav, somebody who eats on tishbav, yoyim anachem b'vikas hamazon. Rabbi says somebody who is never forced to eat on tishbav, he should say nachem in benching. I believe that some benchers have got nachem in it, and this is not a printing mistake, but it's meant for those who need to break their fast. Pardon?
Where is it in
the Torah of Nishma?
Where
in
Benjamin
is it? Where
is it?
Yeah, it is there, that's right, yeah.
Is it?
Yeah.
Wouldn't
it make more sense
though? No, because the
Amishim
is
the Rabbanim ones, right? There's not a Hodah. It's not Yavah, Mishnah Berurah said. Beboni Yerushalayim. Mishnah Berurah said, Beboni Yerushalayim. It is there, yeah. Yeah, Mishnah Berurah. Okay, let's get to the Mishnah Berurah. Let us see. Sifkotna Aleph. Betishabav Oimer. Sifkotna Aleph. We say Aneinu. Betishabav Oimer. Boinu Shalim Nachem. Excuse me, Nachem. Mestim as a mechaba mashma the diet you show Mubacholat Phillips. From the Shulchanoch, it sounds like you say Nachem in all the Tfillis, meaning Marev, Shaches, and Mincha. Kichenu Minik, Yushalim, and that is the custom in Yerushalayim, Aval b'minah seinu, but our custom is in our countries. Hamidik Moshe Kizomis, Dr. Ramah says that we only say Nachem when by Mincha. But there is such a minik. Some people say it all the tefillahs. Now, with regards to Aneinu, Aneinu b'shemei tefillah, Hanil yochit, but the shliach tzibur oimer brocha b'fnei atzma b'chasima bein goy l'roifa. So the shliach tzibur says Aneinu between. So Rabbi Yisai, with regards to Aneinu, when do we say Aneinu? When does the Chazan say Aneinu? How does it work? Yeah, which is when? Yeah. And the Yochid says it. Right. Yeah, so that's what the Mishnah Berurah says over here. That the Yochid says it, the individual says it in Shemeiat Tefillah. Okay, now, but by benching in Sifkot and Hay, we say because the Muslim Bavon Yerushalayim, we say it in Bavon Yerushalayim. Now, we just said that Nachem is said by benching. And we also say that Nachem, he said in the Shemoneh Esrei, which Shemoneh Esrei, which tefillahs, or which of the tefillahs? Nachem is only said by Mincha. So Nachem is said by Mincha, and Nachem is said by benching. So is it by all the benching, or only the benchings, which will be around Mincha time? If a person has to break his fast on Tisha B'Av morning, and he eats, and he benches, does he recite Nachem, yes or no? By Shachis, you don't say Nachem. By benching in the morning, will you say Nachem or not? So therefore,
once you've
and therefore, you do not say Nachem in the morning. Says the Mishnah Berurah. He quotes over here. It seems to be quite a controversy, but the Mishnah Berurah does quote over here as follows: "If Kotniv Av Shebet Tefillah Nenuagulah Abrolak Bencha." Although when it comes to Tefillah, we only say Bamincha Mikol Markim. Nevertheless, Bevirkas Hamozoin the Leker Minik. Yes, the Oyin Boy. No. That's right. Mincha. All right, I understand. But when it comes to benching, you're going to say about every benching. You say Nachem about every benching. He says that Shai Tshuva says there's others who disagree with that. But Lemaisa, the truth is, can you lose out by saying what happens if you do say it?
Well, is it a sign of a hefsa?
No.
Definitely no.
Shana.
Unless you don't have to say it. Why are you adding words?
It's minyan shel yoyim.
When you say it, and it's not shem hashem.
Yeah, but it's not. It wouldn't be considered
a
brachah
benching.
No.
Shem.
Yeah.
So it's just
so you can't lose out. Exactly. It's not what he says, that you can't lose out by saying. So if a person does break his fast, he will recite Nachem. He can't lose out from it. Although by the tefillahs we only do Mincha. Yeah, because that, yeah, I see, because that's an accepted custom. We only say by Mincha. I hear what you're saying. That's already registered. But when it comes to by benching, it's a bit vague, a bit grey area. So,
and someone who wants to add it in.
Since it's a machlokes, we're going
to
say.
Someone who wants to add it in, not on Tisha B'Av.
No, that for sure you can't.
It's
in the 9 days
he's
already.
Not mucking around. He,
yeah, yeah, that's already wrong. That's already wrong. Yeah, okay. That's that. I will just finish off before we pass on the mic to our dear friend Stephen. Before I pass on the mic, just finish off. I remember clearly I was a boch and I heard the Pshimshim Pinkers. Pshimshim Pinkers. I heard a shiv from Pshimshim Pinkers. And he asked, how does it make sense that by Mincha time, we, you know, there's already a Nechoma element, and we are, you know, and we stand up already, we sit on the chairs, but how does that make sense? It's the Beis HaMikdash is burning. Beis HaMikdash in flames. And that's when you're getting up. That's when really the flames took. That's when you're getting up. That's when you stand. That's when Nachem. That's when you're you know, you're calming down. You're relaxing. That's when things get a bit lighter and easier. How does that make sense? How does that really make sense?
It can't get worse
when it comes to the thread bottom. Yeah. What do you want to say? So I said, what? So what I heard then from Rabbi Pinkus was as follows: he said that because that's really the outcome. We don't mourn the outcome. We mourn what caused the Chorban Habayis. So once it's in flames already, it's too late. That's already, you know, that's the reality already. We don't cry over spilled milk. It's about what caused it. So that's represented by, you know, the people that would call. Once it's in flames, it's already too late. It's not, so that's in the Chum already, there's an element of it. Okay, Rabbi, we are pleased to welcome Stephen to say some words.
All right, so I've taken it from Mazari Shimshon on the Parsha Emor, and the Pasuk says, "Vayom Hashem El Moshe Emor El Hakohanim Bnei Aaron Va'amata Elayhem the Nefesh Lo Yitama Va'amov." Hashem said to Moshe, "Say to the Kohanim, the sons of Aaron, and tell them to a person, meaning a dead person, he should not become impure amongst his people." On this part of the Medrash comments, since Aaron feared Hashem, he merited that this parsha would not leave him, or his children, or his grandchildren, until the end of time. And it's which parsha? And it's this parsha about impurity from the dead. It says in Kohanim Re'ayikra Baba 26:6, the Medrash is telling us that for the first, for the rest of time, this mitzvah, that a kohen may not have contact with a corpse, will always apply to kohenim. The question has to be asked, why this particular mitzvah, which is applicable to kohenim, that is in operation for all generations? What about the fact that a kohenim, for example, cannot marry a divorcee or someone from questionable lineage? Why is it only this particular mitzvah that's mentioned? Since there are other mitzvahs that kohenim must fulfill, however, why is this the only one, the Medrash says, that the Torah promised to safeguard them forever? And also, what is the connection between Aaron's fear of Hashem and this parsha? So, the fact that death and purity come back to the world, and that was because of the sin of the golden calf. Before the sin, ever since they accepted the Torah, they were free of the Yetzer Hara and the angel of death. This was the source of Aaron's fear. Before he brought offerings, he was afraid and ashamed to approach the altar because of the sin of the golden calf, which he had himself caused Bnei Yisrael to commit. This means that the fear that he possessed and the concept of impurity coming back into the world were both based in one cause, the sin of the golden calf, and both are interconnected. Regarding the parsha of Tuma, when Hashem warned the kohenim to remain pure, Aaron thought that should a kohen become impure, his holiness would leave him, and he would be allowed to become impure from then on. This must be so in times when we would not have access to the ashes of the Parah Aduma. Hashem therefore said that this is not the case, and said that the mitzvah of avoiding impurity would remain part of a Kohen's life for all eternity, even if he does not have the ability to become pure and will remain impure. Even then, he still may not add additional tumor onto himself. And this shows that Hashem is joining with them in their state of impurity. So if becoming impure would have meant that a Kohen's Kedusha is gone for good, there would be no reason for him not to touch a dead body, since he's already impure. It therefore stands to reason that even once a kohen becomes impure, the Shekhinah is still with him, which is why he must still be careful not to take on additional impurity. Why did Aaron merit Hashem being there beside him even when he was impure? It would have been more sensible that Hashem should leave him until he becomes pure once again. Aaron had made a mistake when he helped the Kalal Yisrael to make the golden calf, but he was terribly ashamed of the situation that resulted, and he was so embarrassed and afraid to approach the altar. So Hashem, taking Aaron's feelings of shame into consideration, forgave him. As the Gemara teaches, someone who sins and is ashamed of his actions will be forgiven for all his sins. Brachos 12b. Aaron's current fear and shame stem from the Yetzer Aromas, a fear that came from his being close to the most exalted being, the Ribono Shel Olam. Such a feeling is exactly doing to Shuva from love, which causes the person's sins to turn into merits. The sin of the golden calf caused death and impurity to come back to the world. Even more than that, he caused the Shekhinah to leave us. But on the other hand, Aaron's shame and fear that he felt when he approached the altar to offer korbanot caused his sin of the calf to turn into a mitzvah. Furthermore, he also merited that even when he would be impure, the Shekhinah would remain by his side, and this mitzvah, and therefore the Shekhinah's presence, would remain with him, with us forever. The Midrash comes to answer why the Pasuk states, "Say to the Kohanim, sons of Aaron." It would have been sufficient to state, "Say to the Kohanim," without, and need not mention Aaron's sons. The Medrash therefore answers that this teaches us that Aaron merited this mitzvah due to his pure fear and love, a mitzvah that would be part of Kol Yisrael forever, that it would be passed down to his sons for all generations, since Hashem would forever be part of Kol Yisrael. The Sefer Ogazah goes on to talk about why converts are obligated to sit in a sukkah. The sukkah is Teshuvah Shomim, You shall dwell in booths for a 7-day period. Every native of Israel shall dwell in booths. The Gemara Sukkos 27b states that the words native, every native, comes to include converts, and that they are also obligated to fill the mitzvah of Sukkah. However, the Zohar 290191b says that the Erev Rav, the Egyptians who joined Am Yisrael at the Exodus, were not allowed to reside
in the Sukkos
of the clouds of glory that Hashem made with Israel in the wilderness. If this is the case, it seems to imply that converts should not be obligated in the mitzvah of Sukkah, since they were not part of the original Sukkah situation, which is the source of being the Jews being obligated in the mitzvah. As the Pasuk says, you shall dwell in booths, so that your generations will know that I caused the children of Israel to dwell in booths. Keeping this in mind, you can suggest that a convert should not have to sit in a sukkah, just as the original converts were not allowed to in the original sukkahs in the wilderness, unless we say that the Erev Rav were different. Why were they different? Hashem didn't want Moshe Rabbeinu to accept them in the first place. Hashem therefore made them stay outside the sukkahs and the clouds of glory. But on the other hand, when it comes to future converts, it's a different situation. Hashem wants these converts, and since he wants them to enter the ranks of this nation, they must perform the mitzvah of Sukkah, which is meant to protect those that dwell within its walls from our enemies, for those who hate us, really from all evil. So Hashem commanded us to build Sukkah, in order that they merit what Klal Yisrael merited in the wilderness. He therefore gave the mitzvah to all future converts, even though their ancestors did not reside in the wilderness sukkahs, so that they will too be protected along with the rest of the nation. And finally, the Kohanim had a unique relationship with the Ribono Shel Olam, and because of that, there are people that they cannot marry and things they cannot do. In the same sense, Klal Yisrael in general has to be careful whom they marry and how they live their lives, because the choices that they make, especially when it comes to marriage, affect all future generations.
Shkoyach, thank you very much. Thank you very much. Shkoyach. Very good, very good.